So good afternoon. Welcome to the first of the two sessions I'm going to be delivering in this room this afternoon. My name's Alan Smith. I work for a company called Active Solution. I'm based in Stockholm. You can tell by my accent that I'm not from Stockholm. I'm from the north of England, from the UK. What I'm going to be talking about in this session is game and simulator physics for developers, gamers and petrol heads. As you can tell by the title, it's not going to be a sort of deep, serious presentation. It's going to be a sort of more light-hearted, looking at some of the fun that you can have working around with physics and especially getting into to game programming. I'm not really a serious game programmer. I just work with games as a hobby. I'm really sort of focused on Windows Azure. I'm a Windows Azure MVP. I do a lot of work with training and mentoring and working with clients in Azure. In the second session, I'm going to be talking about how this game is integrated with the Windows services in the Windows Azure cloud platform and how we can see telemetry data, lap time data. There'll also be a chance between the two sessions to actually play around on the game a bit on the big screen. I've got an Xbox controller, so if you want to set a few lap times, and they will be sort of recorded and put into the cloud in Azure, and you can go in and see the telemetry data on a website for that type of stuff. So as I mentioned, the project that I'm working on is kind of a hobby project. I was building a training course for Pluralsight, and I wanted an example that could show how Windows Azure storage services could be used in a creative way. I'm a big Formula One fan, so I kind of really like the work that was going on with telemetry data. I'm wearing the Lotus official Formula One t-shirt. Microsoft is actually doing a lot of work with the Lotus team with Windows Azure and various other technologies to help the Lotus team get their telemetry data into the cloud and process it and that type of stuff. So I chose the name Red Dog Racing. Red Dog was the code name for Windows Azure a long, long time ago. And it's also Red Bull, sort of parody on Red Bull, the racing team there. So as I mentioned, I really like working with Windows Azure. I like to look at creative things that you can do with Windows Azure. I was a physics geek at school. I was top of the class in physics, so I'm kind of really interested in this type of stuff, especially mechanics, forces, vectors, what happens when you get projectiles going off a jump, how do you calculate gravity forces, resultant forces. That's the kind of stuff that I was really naturally good at school, and I kind of like playing around with that type of stuff in physics simulations. As I mentioned, I'm a big Formula One fan. I watch all of the Grand Prix. Very occasionally I get to go and see a Grand Prix live. And I also like playing racing games. I think Forza Horizon is one of my favourites. I like the mix between having quite good simulation but also having an arcade-style gameplay in there as well. So as I mentioned, Red Dog Racing is adapted. It's on the XNA platform, Microsoft XNA platform, and it's adapted from a game that was called XNA Racer, which was a sample game that was built for the XNA platform. And what I started off doing was building the integration between that game and Microsoft Azure. And a warning, game programming is dangerously addictive. So picking up Unity at 8 o'clock on a Friday night and thinking you're just going to spend 2 hours playing around with 3D graphics, guaranteed it's just going to blow away your whole weekend. You're going to get addicted to that stuff. It's really good fun to work with. You can produce some really creative results with it. So what I'm going to focus on this session is really on the game and simulator physics, how physics engines work, a bit about what we can do with basic physics engines, a bit about what is built in to platform physics engines, and the basic mechanics that sort of goes on inside computer games. So really deciding, one thing that you've got to decide if you're going to be building a physical simulation is how accurate that physical simulation is going to be. And the people who work in the Formula One industry, they build simulators to actually simulate what happens when the cars are driving around the tracks. Their simulators have incredible level of accuracy and sophistication to be able to make it as accurate as possible with a car. For example, you can see that the front wings on these Formula One cars, every week when they turn up at a Grand Prix, they have these different wings and different bits on there. They need to simulate how those different bits will affect the downforce and the steering and the airflow and all of the actual dynamics on the car. So it's way, way sophisticated physics engines that they're putting into those. We need to make a choice when we're building computer games as to, how real is the computer game going to be? How real simulation is it going to be? You look at a game like Angry Birds, pretty much everybody has played Angry Birds. And the reason I think that Angry Birds is so successful is because of the physics engine. It just feels nice. You say the game has a nice feel. When the birds fly into all the pigs and all the buildings, they actually fall down and you've got all of this nice physics calculating how everything should fall. It's very, very, very dynamic. So if you've really got to make a decision, when you're thinking about a game or an application, are you going to put some physics in there? You know, you look at some applications, you know, my daughter plays a lot of the applications on Surface, and some of them, the physics are just terrible. It's not really based on any physical equations. It just doesn't look right, doesn't feel right. In other, you know, games, other simulators, they've got really, really nice physics, and it does really make a difference. So when you're thinking about physics, you know, one way that you can go is aiming towards the simulator crowd, the people who build racing sims. Is anybody into sims? So these aren't games. They don't play games. They drive simulators. And they build these things at home, what they're called rigs. I have a friend at work who's contemplating whether to spend €1,000 on a racing seat to sit in and play on the Xbox 360 or play these racing games on the PC. So there's a lot of money that's spent. I've got another friend who spent €250 on a gear lever for the actual racing game. He's got an actual Porsche racing wheel and all of this stuff built in the cellar there. The flight sim guys, they just go you know, one level beyond. That's the kind of stuff they build. And my favourite one is... that one there. I kind of think that the wife approval factor on that is going to go into the negative numbers. That thing's going to take over the whole dining room. So really deciding on you know, how I was going to approach working with the physics engine. What happened was I basically, you know, got this sort of a game integrated with Windows Azure. I published it with Click once. One of my friends played on it. He's kind of like one of these sim geeks. And he said, you know, there's no physics in there. There's no simulation. It's just like, you know, steering an object over a 3D surface. You may as well be steering a banana. And so really looking at sort of what is in the XNA Racer, I'll basically show you what the starting solution is. If you read through the story of how this was developed, the game was written in about 3 weeks by a game developer. And the idea was not to, you know, reach out and grab in an external physics engine and make good physics. So the description of the game basically says, you know, the physics on this is very, very basic. It's intended to be very basic. But it does give you a bit of a sort of a playability in this game. And you can download the source code for this game and run it on the XNA platform if you want to. So if you select a class, select a track, and then you can go off driving around this track. And it's got steering in it, it's got collision detection and things like that. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't simulate gravity really well. It doesn't simulate the centrifugal force or the cornering force. So when you get to a corner, it's a case of your actual reaction times and can you actually turn the car around the corner in time. And you will never slide, there's nothing like that. If you actually slow the car down, if I actually brake there and slow down to a stop, you can see that the car doesn't actually steer, it actually rotates rather than steering. So that's basically the level that they put into there. So I kind of thought over Christmas that, you know, I'll actually rewrite this physics engine. I was kind of thinking that, you know, I was top of the class at physics at school. I know a bit about, you know, C#, and this is kind of what I'm going to do. I know a bit about physics, you know, I'm kind of into 3D programming. So my idea was to start with XNA Racer, put in some fun-style arcade gameplay, improve the physics. What I wanted to do was to use the maths and the physics that I got taught at school. I'm not talking about university-level maths and doing anything really complicated. Just the basic stuff you learn in physics and the basic stuff you learn in maths with sort of vectors and mechanics and that type of things. And I just did it as a learning exercise. I want to learn a bit about what goes on inside computer games. So what I didn't want to do was get into realistic sim-style physics and dealing with tire slip curves and magic formulas and all this type of stuff. I didn't want to use an existing physics engine. You can actually, you know, bring in this code and just get it to work. But I kind of wanted to learn how this worked myself. I didn't want to go out to people's blogs and start copying and pasting big chunks of C# into the application to get things working. And also, if you've ever worked with Unity, Unity has its own built-in physics engine and it has wheel colliders. I wanted to stay in XNA. I basically use this game as a lab in some of the training courses I teach. And the Azure, people who are learning Azure are more happy in Visual Studio than they will be working with Unity. So I didn't want to go too far away from Visual Studio. I know you can use Visual Studio for Unity development, but I wanted to stay on the actual .NET platform. So I was kind of thinking, you know, I was good at physics at school. I know quite a lot of C#. I'm good at programming. How hard can it possibly be to build a physics engine in a game engine? What could possibly go wrong? So this is my first attempt at building a physics engine. This is the car stationary on the track with no external forces occurring on it. The next thing I started working on was collision detection, having a real collision detection between the car and the actual track that the car is driving on. Then also having collision detection between the barriers. So when you hit a barrier, it would bounce you back onto the track. I was a Dukes of Hazzard fan when I was a kid, so I wanted to put jumping into the game. I wanted some form of realism, so it would actually be able to simulate the impact that the car would have with the road when you landed from a jump. And then lastly, the tracks actually do have loops in them. The loop simulation wasn't great in the original. I wanted to improve that. And this is where it did start to get complex, because a lot of forces are affecting the car as we actually go around a loop. Now, watch the MPH on the car there. I actually went through and debugged this, and the car gets up to 44 times the speed of sound in a couple of these sequences. So this was basically what happened when I basically sat down and rewrote the physics engine without thinking or without trying to do any sort of pre-study work. I just got to think, I can fix this. This isn't going to be hard. I can make this stuff work. So I kind of got really, really discouraged. And then I started looking around on YouTube and found that, I wasn't the only one who was making mistakes with game physics engines. This is a commercial game. I think it's this Scandia truck simulator. I'm not sure what this game is called, but something's going wrong with the actual crash physics in that one. This one's good. The physics is okay, but there's no actual car. I think this is GTA, a glitch that they've got in there. Then there's my favourite game, Forza Horizon. I think there's a landscape glitch in there where the front wheels can actually fall off the landscape, but the back wheels are actually still hooked onto the ground and actually connecting, so you can drive around like that. And then also there is this hole somewhere where you can actually fall through and disappear. So, physics is hard. I really appreciate the work that these, the Forza team and everybody else who's building this stuff puts in to actually making the physics work. Another really good example of a physics I really like is this, which is the next car game demo. And this isn't realistic physics, but what they've done is they've put in some fantastic collision detection and destruction physics. So the way that this car flies into pieces and collides with stuff and stuff falls down, I think this is just fantastic stuff. This is actually available on Steam, and it was a demo that they put out when they were actually testing and getting the physics engine working for the game. And they put all this kind of like crazy stuff, like hammers that you can drive into. My favorite was these actual car crushers, so you can actually send the car in here. And the actual, work and the calculations that go on, actually figuring out what happens to the car as it goes through these things, it's just incredible, the amount of sort of energy and passion that they're putting into building this stuff. What I really like is the fact that, the wheels still go round on the car when it's in that type of shape. So that's, what you can do if you want to really devote your life to actually working on physics engines and so on. So what I decided to do was to go back to school and start figuring out, what I learnt at school, what I forgot, and what I should have remembered. Does anybody know who this guy is? Isaac Newton. He kind of looks like one of the Top Gear presenters, the guy with the long hair. What's his name again? Is it James May? Yeah, kind of looks like that guy. So what he's responsible for is Newton's laws of motion, all of this stuff that we use when we calculate how stuff is actually going to fly around in the game and hit each other. Also, we're going to be dealing with gravity a lot, with projectiles, the theory of gravitation, and how all this stuff. This one's a lot harder. Does anybody know who this is? Leonhard Euler, and what he was responsible for. Interesting thing, when I was looking up him, really the stuff that we're interested in games is Euler integration and the Euler method using in physics simulations. But I also read that he actually invented graph theory, which is used in social networks to build graph databases and used a lot by Twitter and Facebook today for those types of applications. So I basically started with a pen and paper over Christmas and just started drawing things. I was basically doing this while drinking a bottle of wine and basically trying to figure out, how does this stuff work? How do I start from, just a plain sheet of paper and build a physics engine? So I started thinking about, well, what happens when you get a car and the wheels turn? You're going to have a turning radius, you're going to have a wheelbase, and then you can actually put in some code into an application and figure out what the turning radius is based on the wheelbase and based on the actual steering angle. And I was doing these basic calculations trying to figure out what would happen on the car. I'd draw things like this and say, okay, what are all the forces that are acting on the car. We've got gravity, which is pushing the car down onto the road. We've got the tractional force of the engine pushing the car forwards, and then that's negated when you slam on the brakes. As the car starts moving, you've got rolling friction, which is all the friction in the gears and so on, which is proportional to the speed. And then you've got aerodynamical drag, which is proportional to the square of the speed. As the car travels, you may want to simulate downforce as well. So the car has wings on it, that pushes the car down onto the track. That gives you more grip as you're going around corners. And that's kind of the key to Formula One, getting the balance between the downforce and the aerodynamical drag right for the various tracks that they're going to be driving. So figuring out how all of this stuff works, and also the lateral force that's going to be applied to the car, is going to be very useful when we're doing these basic calculations and so on. So what I started off with was doing a 2D simulation for a car, and basically saying, okay, well, you know, all the 3D stuff is going to be really complex to achieve. Let's go back to basics and let's just build a basic 2D car simulation and see how that is going to work. So this is basically what I built for the 2D simulation. It's a Windows Presentation Foundation application. And I've basically got a timer going on in the background, which is updating the game loop. We'll talk a bit about game loops later on. So basically what we're doing is we're taking a driver input, and I haven't, you know, sort of wired this up to a keyboard or to a mouse or anything, or to a game controller. I've just put basic sliders where we can control the inputs that I'm going to be having in the game. So I've got a slider for the throttle. Increasing the throttle will give the car some forwards momentum. You can see the downforce and the speed occurring here. You can also see a bit of telemetry data coming up here in these lines. If I actually just restart the application, it will restart the actual telemetry data graphs. So if you give the car some speed, that will basically increase its speed. And then if we actually put the throttle down to zero, what's going to happen is that the car is going to be travelling, but you've got rolling friction, you've got aerodynamical drag, which is going to slow the car down. So you can see that the speed gradually decreases. We can also decrease the speed by applying brakes, and that will basically stop the car as well. And then we can give the car a bit more speed with the throttle. And that's basically governing how the car is going to drive. We've also got a steering angle, so I can actually cause the car to turn. And what I was basically doing with this simulation is, seeing what happens when the car turns, when we actually make turning movements. It's going to put lateral force onto the car. That's going to push the car out sideways and cause the tyre to slip. Now, one of the things that will affect the way that the car is going to slip sideways is a downforce. As the car goes faster, it builds up speed. We've got all of the aerodynamical services. That's going to be pushing the car down on the track. And more downforce is going to give you more of a turning angle. So basically figuring out the calculations. And what I did when I basically started out with this simulation, if we go and look at the code, is I basically started with car.cs, which is a class that represents the car. Now, we've got a lot of constants that are going to govern how the actual car is going to work in the physics engine. So I've basically set the length, the width, the mass, which is going to be in kilograms. I'm using SI units here. I gave it the engine power and the brake power. I've also, and I'm going to talk about this towards the end of the session, simulated a kinetic energy recovery system and a drag reduction system. How many people watch Formula One on a regular basis or aware of Formula One? So you know what KERS and DRS is and how the drivers use those. I kind of wanted to put those into the actual simulation to make it a bit more interesting to play. So I do have some stuff like the drag coefficient, which is going to be for the aerodynamical drag. And then I've got the DRS drag coefficient. So when you're using a drag reduction system, you get less drag. And these are the various numbers that I'm going to be using. So when you're working with a physics engine, one of the things that's really key is getting these numbers right so the thing feels playable. And you're spending a lot of time just running up the simulations, seeing how it works, making small changes to these various constants here, and then seeing how the actual application runs again. Now, if you're going to be building more advanced simulations, more advanced driving games, you're going to have a selection of cars, different cars that you can use. So what they do when they're actually, working out how these cars are going to work, they'll have a large number of different factors that they can actually put into the physics engine. And they'll basically, get this stuff from suppliers and, basically figure out what the car is going to be. And you can, building your own driving games, you can basically say, well, decreasing the mass of the car is going to make the car accelerate faster. You can also increase the engine power, and that's really going to affect the actual drivability of the car. Different cars will have different characteristics. So if you're playing, Forza or, the actual proper racing games, they very often allow you to go in and customise this stuff. You can, add components to your car and reduce the weight, increase the stiffness and so on. And they'll have a lot of actual, data on this. I read quite a bit about how the Forza team had built their simulation physics, and they kind of have these big discussions with car companies because they use real cars. So they'll talk to Ferrari and Porsche and BMW, and they say there's all these big discussions that go on. They have the this discussion with the technical team to get all of the technical stats for the car right, and then they have these big arguments with the marketing team about how the car should be represented in the driving game and should the actual car have the same performance as the car does on the track, and what happens if the Mercedes are faster than the BMWs and all that kind of thing. It's important to marketing it for the actual cars and so on. So building in Forza, I can't remember, I think it was sort of 40 or 50 different points that they can actually characterise for each car and be able to customise it and vary. So those are basically the constants. The next thing we have are the inputs. This is what the actual driver can do to the car to actually change the car's definitions. So if you're running with a keyboard or an Xbox controller, what you're going to be doing is mapping the controls from the Xbox controller in the game to be able to make modifications for these actual parameters here. So what I've put in is the steering angle, the throttle percent, the brakes percent, the curves and the DRS, and then I hook them up to the Xbox controller. So in the actual 3D game, the steering control is driven from one of the thumbsticks, throttle percent and brakes percent are driven from the triggers. And then I've got curves and DRS mapped onto a couple of the actual buttons there. Also, I'll mention a bit about driver AI. It's a great resource I'll give you on building driver AI if you're interested in looking at that. When you're also building the driver artificial intelligence, if you're running other cars, you can use the same car class. And the driver AI should actually be sending input into these actual inputs there. So it can be driven by a real person or driven by driver AI just by sending in stuff into those various inputs there. So those are the driver inputs. Next, we've got the actual variables, and I'm programming in 2D here. So I'm using the points class, and I'm using the vector class, and I'm using doubles to represent the various variables. And this is kind of where the car is going to be, where the car is heading, what the actual downforce is going to be on the car, the actual velocity. Also, if the actual car is slipping as we're driving it around corners and so on. So looking at down into the code, we'll talk a bit about the Euler method and Euler integration. We're basically getting a time in milliseconds, which is going to be the actual time difference between the frames. And for each frame, we're actually going in and calculating the various differences there. I have a method here which calculates the steering, which I can go to. And this is basically showing sort of how we're actually going to be calculating the various steering. So I'm calculating the turning angles, finding the change in position, updating a velocity and direction. And then somewhere I make an actual decision. I get the actual lateral force on the car that we're going to get from going around the corner. And you can figure out, based on the downforce, the tyre friction coefficient and the speed, what the actual maximum amount of tyre force that we're going to be able to get on the car. And if the lateral force exceeds the tyre force, then we're actually going to be slipping and the car is going to slide. Now, if anybody's actually worked with this type of stuff before, you're probably looking at this and going, well, that's a bit strange. That's not how it's done in the real world. If you look at, there's a magic formula, I can't remember the name or the pronunciation of, that is used in a lot of driving games to actually model steering. I purposefully didn't go in and look at how this stuff worked. I purposely didn't copy-paste that formula into my code. So this is just me, figuring out how the engine is going to work and building it from that. But this basically gave me a simulation that I could use and play around with and make different changes to. So I can actually use curves boost to actually increase the speed of the car. I can put on DRS and then we're going to get sliding a lot around the corners. And I was basically trying to figure out, okay, does this feel right? Does this have the right feel? I wasn't concerned about the actual maths and how close it was to reality. I was really going for, does this have a nice feel to it? So next thing we think about is calculating the laws of motion, the physics, and how we can bring this into the driving game. And this is when it goes back to the school kid physics. You've got these questions where, a car is going to drive off a certain height. Where is that car going to hit the ground? And you get various, inputs that you can put into this equation. You get the actual height that the car is going to drive off. You get the velocity of the car, how fast the car is traveling, and you get the actual gravity, the force that's going to be acting on the car. Now, We don't typically in the school physics. We're not too concerned about rolling resistance and friction and all of the actual aerodynamical drag and that type of stuff. That stuff is very complicated to work. And even if you do calculate aerodynamical drag in a driving game, it's not going to be that accurate because there's things like turbulence and vortices and all the kinds of stuff that the Formula One teams are going to be putting into their actual physics. It's really, really hard stuff to be able to get all of that airflow dynamics stuff working correctly. So you tend to make approximations. And it doesn't really matter how complex your driving game, how complex the physics is. They all tend to assume that the Earth is flat, that you've got this kind of flat driving world. So every actual physics engine will have, shortcuts to the actual simulations that it's doing. So you can basically use this type of, school kid physics to be able to figure out where the car is going to land. S equals ut plus half at squared. S is the displacement, u is the initial velocity, t is time, and then a is acceleration. You can do these calculations and say if it's travelling at so many metres per second and this is at 3 metres high, the point of impact is going to be over here. Now, that's basically calculating where one thing is going to happen. However, in games, we're typically doing this calculation for every frame that we process during the game. Now, dependent on your frame rate, in the actual calculation, what you're going to get is an actual frame time, which is going to be a certain fraction of a second. And in that particular fraction of a second, what you're doing is calculating where the car is going to be. So the actual calculations that you're doing, if you're using this Euler integration, tend to end up like this. Every frame, you're calculating the actual position of the car and where that position is going to be. Again, this technique is probably not used in the more sophisticated gaming engines. It does have a lot of inaccuracies in it. Firstly, are you using floating points or are you using decimal data types? Every time you do a calculation, you're going to be losing a certain amount of accuracy due to all of the sort of floating point errors and so on. And if you're doing those calculations 50 times a second, all of those inaccuracies are going to add up. So this point of impact that you get by using the Euler method may not be the actual point of impact where the car would actually hit the road. Also, if you've got a variable frame rate, you may have 10 game frames occurring before you hit here, or you may have 50 game frames occurring before you actually impact. And dependent on the number of calculations that you do, you may get different inaccuracies. So somebody may land somewhere else if they're running at a higher frame rate. And that's kind of the nature of using this Euler method. There are more sophisticated ways of being able to handle this. This is kind of the way I chose. Remember, I'm concerned about the feel of the game rather than the actual physical accuracy of the game. Now, the game inside it in the actual game engines will typically have a game loop, and the game loop will probably look something like this. Whilst we're playing the game, we're going to get the inputs from the player, look at the actual controllers, see what the actual player is doing. We're going to take that input, and we're going to put that input into the physics engine. You've seen those actual properties that I've got on my car.cs class there. And the physics engine is going to calculate the physics and figure out where things should be. And once that's been done, we go to the render method, and the render method draws everything on the screen. And that loop is going to be running 20, 40, 50, 60 times a second, dependent on the actual frame rate of the game. And the frame rate may vary as well in some games. If you get more objects coming on the screen and the render time takes a bit longer than usual, the frame rate may slow down in games. We'll have seen this if you've played a lot of games on PC, Xbox, and so on. So this is what the update method looks like in XNA. What we're doing is we've basically got this base game class that we are deriving from, and the update method will get called for every frame. So I'm calling it update on the actual base game. The game engine is going to give us the frame time. So that's basically telling us how many fractions of a second, or what fractions of a second, this is measured in seconds, the actual game engine has between the actual last frame. And that will be basically known as the move factor, how far a thing is going to move in this particular game frame. What I then do in my 3D game simulation is just call mcar.calculate and pass in the actual move factor. And I use that move factor as the actual time. So if you're traveling at 10 meters a second and you get 1/20th of a second as the actual frame time, you're going to travel half a meter. And then you can base all of the other physics around that. What's going to happen in the car in that particular time slice? And once that's been done, once the car physics has been calculated, we update something called the car render matrix, which is going to update the actual matrix and camera, and then we render the game, and then we actually run through and do that again. So now that we're working in the 3D world, we're going to be doing 3D programming rather than 2D programming. Now, has anybody here worked with Unity, done any Unity dev? Has anybody done any XNA dev? So Unity and XNA both have the concept of having these vector classes and matrix classes, and they're very, very similar how they're used in the two different engines. XNA has some features that Unity doesn't, and that Unity has different features as well. So you are going to be programming with 3D vectors if you're going to be doing more sophisticated stuff with game programming. So a vector basically is going to be represented like this, with an X, a Y, and a Z coordinate, and that's going to map to the X, Y, and Z coordinates in the game space. And what that's going to give us is an actual line that we can actually use for basic calculations. So how do we use vectors in a game, typically in a driving game? Well, in XNA, we've got a vector that can represent the position. You know, you could have a point class to represent a position, but in XNA we use a vector, and that's basically going to say the car is here in the actual 3D game world if this is going to be at 0, 0, 0. Another thing you can use vectors for is the actual direction. Where is the car pointing? And that's going to allow the rendering engine, as if you've got the actual direction, the up direction for the car as well, to actually draw the car and render the car. It's also going to allow us to do calculations to, you know, figure out what's happening to the car and so on. You can also use vectors to represent velocities. Velocity is basically a measure of speed, but it also has direction associated with it. The car will have a velocity. Its speed will be, 200 miles an hour, and its velocity will be, so many meters per second in a specific direction. And very often in driving games, when you're sliding around corners, the velocity of the car is going to be different from the direction of the car. And you can use that to calculate all the tire friction, things like that, and so on. Acceleration is the change in velocity. You know, what happens between these two time slices? Are you pushing on the accelerator, pulling on the brakes, and how is velocity going to change? Also, you've got various forces. Forces can also be represented as vectors in there. So most of the stuff that you're going to be dealing with in the actual game engine is going to be represented by these vectors. So what can we do with vectors? One of the things that we can do is vector addition for calculating forces. In the game loop, I'm doing this a lot, both in the 2D game and the 3D game. There's all of the forces on the car. There's the weight, there's the engine force, there's the road friction, there's the aerodynamical drag, there's the downforce. And what we can do is basically put these forces together in every frame when we're calculating them and figure out the actual resultant force on the car. So from all of these forces, this is basically the force that's going to be affecting the car. Force equals mass times acceleration. So if we then know the actual mass of the car, we can figure out what the acceleration of the car will be. And acceleration is change in velocity. So if we know the acceleration, we can figure out the change in velocity and figure out, you know, where the car is going to be, what its velocity is going to be, what its speed is going to be in the next game frame. And that's the type of calculation that I'm doing in a lot of the games. And you can see a sample of the code there. For what I'm doing is looking at the resultant force. Gravity times mass is going to be the actual force that we get due to gravity. Gravity is the constant, you know, 9.86 meters per second or whatever. Then we've got the engine force, the friction, the drag, and the downforce. We add all those together, and that basically tells us, what forces are acting on the car. A couple of other things that are useful to know about vectors and how we can actually use these. First is the cross product. The cross product, or vector product, is a binary operation on two three-dimensional vectors, and it will basically result in a normal vector, or a vector that's perpendicular to those vectors. So imagine you've got a car. We know the direction. We know which way is up according to the car. We want to calculate what's going to happen when the car slides around a corner. Well, by using the cross product, we can actually figure out the right, and by negating that, get the actual left vectors on the car and figure out, okay, the centrifugal force is going to be acting in this particular direction as the car travels around the corner. So here, with the actual vector 3 class that we've got in XNA, we can use a vector 3.cross, pass in the direction and the up, and that is actually going to return the right vector for us. Another operation that we can perform on vectors is the dot product, which is basically figuring out the proportions or ratios between vectors. So if you've got a car that's travelling up a hill and you want to figure out what the actual force on the road is there, you've got the actual down direction of the car, you've got gravity acting on the car, and you can actually take the mass and multiply that by vector dot gravity and down. And this will basically not return a vector, it returns a scalar quantity, which this is a float, and that's the basic force on the car that's pushing the car down onto the track. So this is basically how my homebrew physics engine works. And a disclaimer, you know, it is not a sophisticated physics engine. It's kind of what I came up with when I was building this to learn a bit about how physics works. So my example of when I'm actually, you know, driving the car off the cliff, what I do is I put in all of these vectors and all of the actual forces on the car. I calculate the downforce, the DRS, the air resistance, all of the rolling friction. And I figure out, okay, where is the car going to be in the actual next game frame? And this one's fairly simple because the car is basically driving off a cliff, so it's going to be somewhere in the middle of the air. And I basically say, okay, the car is going to be there. That one's fairly easy. Well, however, the car could be travelling along a flat road. Well, what happens then? When I calculate all of the forces on the car and say the next game frame, the car position is going to be there, that's not going to make sense because that's actually below the surface of the road. The car is actually going to be there. So in these scenarios, I figure out where the road is, put the car on the road, and then I see, okay, well, there's a difference between where the car wants to be if the road wasn't there and where the car is because the road is there. So what happens is I get this kind of vector, and this vector is a change in position. And by looking at this change in position, I can basically do a calculation and say, okay, this was say 1/10 of a second, and the car has moved from here to here, so what force would be required to make the car shift from that position up to that position there? And that force in my engine is equivalent to the actual force of the car on the track. So the forces that are pushing this down, we've got downforce and we've got gravity pushing this car down. So if you have a lot of downforce and a lot of gravity, the car is going to be somewhere here. The car will really be on the track, and I figure out what this actual force will be. And that's going to be the downforce I'm using on the car. I can then use that force to calculate, you know, if the car is turning, what the actual pressure on the tyres is going to be and whether the car is actually going to slip going around a corner. This also works in this scenario here, if we're going up a hill, because we've got the car that wants to be here. I'm putting in the same numbers. This is the same vector. However, the car is going to be there. The actual force that's going to be exerted on the car, the force between the car and the track, is going to be much greater in this scenario. And I actually track this using telemetry data. When the car goes round the loop, it was, I think it was 44 times the force of gravity when you actually drive into a loop at full speed in the game. And that's where it comes into, you know, do you want this to be a realistic simulation? A normal car would just break if you put 44 times the force of gravity onto it. Do you want the car to just break when you drive around a loop fast? Is it going to be realistic? You know, my answer is no. We want to make it fun. So that's basically how that works in the compression. So you can get an incredible amount of downforce. If you're going around a banked track or going around a compressed track, you get lots of downforce. And that means that you can, you know, turn the car a lot better on the banked tracks and in the loops. Another scenario is if we're going over the crest of a hill like this, you know, the car wants to be here, it's actually going to be there. So the actual force acting between the car and the track is going to be very, very little. So in the game, when you're actually driving over the crest of a hill, if you've got a turn at the crest of a hill, you have to really slow down because the actual force that you're going to have on the road, between the tyres and the road, is going to be very, very small. And that means that you're going to easily slide sideways in those corners at the crest of the hill and so on. So what I did after I'd actually finished working, you know, sort of through all that and figuring all that stuff out, I basically went into the 3D engine and basically figured out, well, you know, how is this stuff going to work in 3D? And I kind of like the idea of having this 2D skid track and also the, you know, next racing game, how that kind of had this prototype thing with, because you just drive around the car and see how it feels like. So within the actual game itself, I've got various settings that I can put in. And one of the settings here in the actual game, if I can bring it up, is this thing called skid pad, which I can set to true. And then I'll run this in debug mode. So what happens here is, I've just basically commented out and modified the game so that if we've got that setting set in there, that skid pad setting, it won't actually draw the tracks and it will basically make modifications into the position of the car and so on to actually place the car on just an actual sort of a game surface like that. So what this allows me to do is to basically go through and simulate, you know, what happens to the car just driving around on a skid pad. But this is using the 3D physics rather than the 2D physics. And again, you know, I was sort of more concerned about, you know, how does the actual game feel like? Does it feel realistic? Does it give sort of a nice kind of feel when we're running around corners and so on? And I spent a bit of time playing around with different settings, and I have been changing these. I maybe need to go back into the skid pad and make it a bit more realistic. So you could actually drive around corners, and then if you increase your speed in corners, you're gonna slide out and so on. I spent quite a lot of time watching this. If I just drop out of the game. I thought this was great, this kind of a Top Gear thing where they took three cars out to South Wales onto these sands, and they just spent a lot of time driving them around on this kind of a low-friction sand surface. What I'd really like is to actually be able to get the actual physics to feel like it does watching these cars, have the actual sort of sliding out on it. I kind of thought that was it must have been great fun to do that, but also to have that in a game, have those types of physics in there. It's really hard to do that to get that stuff to work properly. The commercial racing games do come close to doing that. And you can change, it's very easy to change the surfaces. One of the things I'm thinking of doing to the game is actually modding the surfaces. So there are some mountains in the game. We've got a road surface, and if you drive up into the mountains, you could change the texture to snow, change the actual friction coefficient, so you start going sliding around on the snow up in the mountains and then come back down and so on. You can actually put stuff like that into the game. So the skid pad was basically a way of being able to play around with the physics engine and say, okay, how does this feel if we're driving it on a flat surface without actually having it in the actual game itself. So, talking about the KERS kinetic energy recovery system and the drag reduction system, once I got the physics engine working with sort of acceleration and brake and so on, I'd also got this scenario where the actual game sends telemetry data out to Windows Azure. And we did this at when we had a Christmas party at my company. I put this game using ClickOnce, and people at the company downloaded the game, and they kind of had this tournament over Christmas. And I was also testing it, tracking the telemetry data. And I found that once you'd figured out how to drive around the track fairly fast and at what speeds you could go around corners, there's very little difference in between the lap times of two different players. And also very little difference in the strategy of these two players. You just accelerate and then brake and go around corners. And there's two guys at the company who are basically, I think Jens and Nicholas they were, who were basically driving and setting lap times within a tenth of a second of each other. And they kept each trying to beat each other's lap time, and it was always very, very close. So I kind of like playing around with the telemetry data, and I wanted to put a bit more strategy into the telemetry data. So if you can see that a driver is driving faster than you, you can go and look at the actual telemetry data and see why that driver is driving faster than you. So kinetic energy recovery system and drag reduction system allows us to do just that. Put a bit of a strategy into the game. So there will be different strategies that you can take when you're driving a lap in relation to how you use the kinetic energy recovery system and so on. So KERS, this is kind of like the hybrid cars. The Toyota Prius and the Formula One cars of last season had a lot in common. They have a battery pack within the Formula One car. The battery pack can be used as a button on the steering wheel that gives an acceleration boost to the car. So that can give you, a certain amount of horsepower. You can use it for overtaking people. And then when the cars go into the corners, when they actually brake, they've got regenerative braking. So they will actually repower up the battery packs as they go into the corners, and then they can use that kinetic energy a bit later on. The Formula One rules, I think, last year stipulated that you could have 7.8 seconds of kinetic energy recovery. It was something like 250 horsepower, the actual boost that it gave you. Now, this year in Formula One, it's got really, really complex. They have just energy recovery system, and they harvest it from the brakes and from the turbo, and there's all kinds of I don't really fully understand sort of how and why they can use this stuff when they're actually driving around the lap, so they do have this sort of these hybrid systems in there. So choosing when to use KERS on a lap is going to be a strategic decision you can take in the race. The DRS, the drag reduction system, this is a movable flap on the rear wing. It reduces the actual aerodynamical drag, but it also reduces the downforce. Now, building this stuff into the physics engine is dead easy. For the kinetic energy recovery system, I've just added a variable, which is a KERS battery percent. And then I've just set a couple of parameters in the physics engine. One of them is the rate of discharge for the KERS engine. The other one is the actual amount of boost that the kinetic energy recovery system will give. And then we've also got a figure that figures, when you actually slam on the brakes, how rapidly is the actual KERS battery going to charge up again. So you can use it for acceleration. When the car accelerates, you deplete the KERS battery. And then when the car brakes, when you actually brake into the corners, you're actually going to be powering up the KERS system. That's going to give you a more of a boost. So now that's put a bit of strategy in the game. You can go into the telemetry data. If somebody's beaten you by 2 seconds on a lap, you can see when they were using KERS in the lap in the telemetry data, and you know, be able to actually see if that is going to affect your driving techniques. The drag reduction system's in the Formula One car. It's in the form of a movable flap that they've got on the rear wing. So you've got the car driving along, you're generating downforce, you're generating aerodynamical drag. And what they can do in Formula One, in the qualifying, they can use it whenever they want, unless it's raining, and in the actual race. I think after three laps, this becomes enabled, and there's certain sections where if you're less than 1 second behind the car in front, you can actually use this down the main straight or down another straight section of the course. And what they do is they just basically flip it like that. And the downforce is going to be reduced. The aerodynamical drag is also going to be reduced. So it basically makes the car faster and less, you know, sort of it gives you less grip going around corners. So in the game, I have really exaggerated both the KERS and the DRS system. In Formula One, the drivers are very close to each other. So small fractions of difference in the way that the physics work in a Formula One car is going to mean that you're going to be able to overtake somebody. In the racing game, I wanted a larger difference. So I do make a big change in the drag and the downforce when DRS is enabled. Also, I've really exaggerated the effect of KERS in the game to actually make that a bit more playable there. So looking at KERS and DRS and the actual game itself, what I'll do is drop into the actual game and start to look at a bit of the code. So going into car.cs, this is the actual 3D physics engine that I've worked on the car. First thing I dropped in here was a scale error. The game unit was meant to be in meters, so you know, a vector of 10 would be at 10 meters long. However, when I started doing calculations and figuring out you know, sort of how realistic this was, I kind of figured out that you know, it wasn't really in meters. It was quite a lot larger. So I basically put in this scale error, where anything that's doing calculations from meters to the actual game world is going to be multiplied or divided by that scale error. Appropriate there, and that kind of corrected it and made the gravity feel better. You know, in the actual jump that you saw in the actual you know, bad physics sequence, that was when the gravity was a lot less than it should have been, and the car seemed to float too much. It wasn't actually under the sort of force of real gravity. I've got the actual you know, properties on the car here: the height, the wheelbase, the mass, and I kind of copy pasted stuff across from the simulation that I had, the other simulation, the 2D simulation, into this one, and basically figured out these various numbers. So you can see here that I've got the height, the wheelbase, and that the mass of the car is 1,000 again. We're actually using floats in XNA. I'm kind of not that happy about that, because you do get inaccuracies, and I've discovered inaccuracies, especially at very high frame rates, because of using floating point. It would be good to use double and have more accuracy. XNA is quite an old engine. It's actually deprecated. So I don't know, does Unity to use doubles for all this type of stuff, for vectors and things? I'd guess that it probably would do. So I mean, it's not that great using floats, but you know, that's the way XNA works. So I'm basically setting things like the max engine power, max brake power, KERS boost. The harvest time is related to when you're braking, how much KERS energy is harvested from the actual brakes and so on. Then I've got the friction coefficients. The friction coefficient is the friction coefficient between the tyres and the actual road. Now, that will change on different surfaces. So I may want to mod that if you're driving on sand or driving on ice. And changing that would actually affect the actual way the car works. We've got the drag coefficient for the actual car. I've also got falling drag coefficient. So when the car is actually you know, flying and basically falling down like that, we've got, as well as the drag coefficient, which is against the actual car going forwards, we've got a drag coefficient against the car going down. So it won't actually fall at thousands of miles an hour if it actually falls off. It will actually, you know, be braked by actually falling it through the air. Then I've got the downforce coefficients and the drag coefficients with DRS and without DRS and so on. I've got various tyre properties like lateral static friction coefficient and lateral static lateral slip factor and so on. And various things like gravity. This is the actual gravity, which is acting in the negative z direction at 9.81 metres per second. And because that's in metres, I've then got to use the scale factor to actually correct that with the game world. And that was what was causing the cars to basically float too much as they were actually flying in the original demo. You can drive the game with the actual mouse, so I do have a bit of steering sensitivities, and you can tweak these to basically adjust and make the actual game more responsive as you're playing them with a mouse. Sometimes it can be challenging, it steers too quickly or it steers too slowly. Now, some of these you could actually put in the game interface if you wanted to, so popping up this stuff so you can actually mod this in the game interface. You can change the mouse sensitivity, the controller sensitivity. That's something that could be useful to do. Again, here I've got the driver inputs. I've got steering angle, throttle, brake percent, various variables. So the next thing I did was started writing a bunch of properties that could basically do calculations for me. The speed is the length of the velocity vector. That tells us how many meters per second we're traveling. You've seen the example of car, right? We need to return a car matrix to the rendering engine so we can actually render the car. So what that's doing is creating a car matrix from the car coordinates. And then I've then got various methods here that are going to figure out the engine force. And I'm using the direction vector, multiplying that by the maximum engine power, multiplied by the throttle percent. So 0% throttle, this is going to be 0. 100% throttle, you're going to be getting the max engine power. Then I've got, are we using KERS? Then we add in the engine power multiplied by the KERS boost. Otherwise, we just return 0. So it's fairly basic to actually return these vectors like the engine force, the brake force, the rolling friction, the aerodynamical drag, and so on. And then if we go and look at the actual references here, you can see actually figuring out the acceleration forces in the game. We're basically adding these various vectors together to be able to figure out how the car is going to react with these various forces applied on it and so on. So that's basically what goes on in the actual 3D engine. So what I'll do now is just basically run the 3D engine. I'm also going to run this, which is the back end for the racing game. And I'll bring this actual Red Dog Racing project here. So what this is doing is this is basically acting as the back end for the game, which is going to be capturing driver position and telemetry data and pumping it into Windows Azure. You can see it's basically harvesting a bit of data there from the actual tracks there. The data is stored on queues in Windows Azure Service Bus, so that's basically why we're seeing sort of data appearing here. And I'll basically stick these two screens here so you can basically see a bit about what's going on there whilst I'm actually driving. So let's find the racing game. I think I'll actually change the resolution a bit and so I can actually line these guys up. And what I'll do is just basically drive around the lap on the advanced track and just show you what's working. So basically, I'd put the physics into the game. There are still glitches in the physics engine here. So I've got, I can accelerate with the actual controller there. I can also use the KERS. And also, going around the corners when I reach a corner, we now will actually slide as we attempt to go around corners because of the actual physics that I put in to calculate the turning friction. Now, I've made quite a few modifications. I put the Windows Azure logo onto the car. I've also added the option to jump. So I kind of like the idea of being able to jump through loops in other tracks to add a bit of interest to the game. You do actually see the ghost cars from the other tracks going around those loops as you're jumping through them and so on. So you can see that we do have the integration with the back end. You can see that that console application is pulling out the telemetry data that's coming out of the driving game. And this can be very useful for debugging the physics engine and so on. We're also sending the lap time data and the sector data and the car position data, which hopefully will actually be appearing on the car position map. You can see that dot there with Alan. That's basically my position, which is going through the Windows Azure Service Bus and coming back to that actual driver tracker application there. So the actual coming up to one of the loops, I did actually get the loop physics working here. So the original game, you could actually stop at the top of a loop and nothing would happen, but here it does actually, you will actually fall if you do stop at the top of the loop. So I'll drive around that and I'm not too far away from actually completing the lap. And you can see that I can use the actual KERS to get my boost. I can also put on the DRS, and if I attempt to go around a corner with the DRS on, you'll see that it just slides off, and there we've got the actual jump physics as well. I'm actually recording, and one of the things I'm going to do is to put into Azor is the biggest crashes and the biggest jumps. And then, because it's actually storing the replay data, you should actually be able to go into the game and do a replay of the 10 biggest crashes and the 10 biggest jumps, because we're actually storing or preserving that data into Azor. So I'm almost at the end of the lap here. Should cross the line fairly soon. And I've probably set a horrible lap time here, but it's over 2 minutes, so it's not too great. And there we go, and across the line. As you can see, the scoring isn't too great. I came in second place there, and it's saying rank 11. There's so much stuff that I need to fix in the game, and the challenge is getting the time and be able to prioritise, you know, what stuff needs fixing. As I mentioned, it's a hobby project that I play around with in my spare time. You know, I don't get paid to do this type of stuff. But what we also get from this actual game is, as I mentioned, the integration with Azor. And that's kind of the main focus. That's what I should be doing. I should be focusing on Windows Azor stuff. It's just that the gaming and all the physics stuff is really addictive, so I just end up doing that too much for fun. But we do have this site, which is as a Windows Azor website. Now, I've just driven a lap on the advanced track here. So if I go to the advanced track, it records my best lap time. I went in with the name of Alan, and, you know, that was my second best lap time. So kind of like in Formula One, when you do the qualifying, you know, you set 30 laps, and it's going to be your best lap that appears in the high score tables. But the Azor functionality allows us to go in here and see the actual telemetry data that's coming up from the physics engine. So I'm storing the speed, I'm storing the driver input, the throttle, the brakes, the DRS, the Kerr's battery and stuff. So if you like this game, I'm going to be around here in the break. I've got my next session in here. I will set this up if you do want to drive a few laps and set a lap time and sort of check out how the game works. I'll sort of set that up for you so you can actually play the game during the sessions then. So rounding off, I have given you a warning that game development is addictive and as a hobby it's going to consume a lot of your time. However, if you do make the voluntary choice to start experimenting with gaming, then there's kind of a few nice resources that you can actually work with. So as I mentioned, I did the actual Azor integration as a way of being able to actually do a course for Pluralsight. I kind of wanted to have something fun and something a bit different, a different way of using Azor storage. So my next session, and also if you do have a Pluralsight pass, the Windows Azor Storage in Depth, I use that driving game as the example in my course. If you don't have a Pluralsight subscription, I've got some month-long subscriptions here that you can pick up from me and go in and check that stuff out. So on to gaming engines. I'm working in XNA. XNA has been deprecated by Microsoft, and I kind of think that was a real shame. You can download it. I think it is now open sourced on Codeplex. You can also get the original XNA to run in Visual Studio. So if I go in here, file new project, I can go into the XNA Game Studio 4. I can start a new Windows game or a new Xbox 360 game, and I've got the actual gaming templates to be able to do that. So that's good stuff. We've also got technology called Monogame. Is anybody working with Monogame? So Monogame is basically an open source project which has taken the XNA framework and put it onto the Mono framework. With XNA, you can build for Windows desktop and you can build for the Xbox 360. With Monogame, you can build for all kinds of things. You can build for Windows Phone, Windows 8, Windows desktop. You can build for Android and Apple devices. So it's got a lot of support for doing a different cross-platform gaming. So I kind of think the main thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you've built stuff on XNA, then you will go forwards onto Monogame, and Monogame will be a nice platformer to work with. However, if you've not built stuff on XNA, if you may be thinking of getting into game programming from scratch, I'd recommend taking a look at Unity. There is a free install of this, and I do have it on my desktop. So what Unity is, I kind of didn't like it that much at first because I'm a programmer. I'm a developer. I like working in Visual Studio. So basically, what Unity has is it kind of looks like this 3D environment here. And you can do all kinds of cool stuff. Like you've got like fire that you can put in. Or could you? How does this stuff work? Yeah, I'm getting stuck here. Oh, yeah, thanks. So you've got all these kinds of different effects that you can drop in. And kind of with a very little skill or talent or knowledge, you can kind of create this stuff and have all of these kind of cool and groovy effects going on. It does have quite a lot of physics built into it. So it has wheel colliders, it has physics engines, it has all of this type of stuff where you can actually go in and configure how all of this stuff works. So if I didn't have that XNA Racer, kind of this is the technology I'd start to look about building the game on. So with Unity as well, it is cross-platform. There's different versions. This is the free version that I'm using that is great for playing around with. I taught a Windows Azure course to college students in Stockholm a few months ago, and a couple of them were actually working with Unity and building their game. So Unity is also powered by Mono. So if you do want to think about doing the Azure integration, which I'm covering in my next section, there are ways to be able to integrate Unity with Windows Azure. There's ways to be able to integrate the other gaming platforms with Windows Azure, if you do want to focus on that integration. Also, I've mentioned Pluralsight. I will mention a competitor to Pluralsight as well, I think is a fantastic resource if you are going to be into gaming and physics. Has anybody checked out the GameInstitute.com stuff? I stumbled across this when I was searching for stuff related to car physics as well. And what Gary Simmons has done is he's actually built a racing game called GA Racer. And he's basically, if you join this Game Institute, pay a membership for this, you get the source code and you actually get to go in and check out all of the actual lessons. And even if you don't have the actual subscription to that, you can go into this actual website here. And if you are interested at all in driving games and how stuff works, this sample lesson is fantastic. It's talking about driver AI, driver artificial intelligence for racing games. And it's done a really good job on actually creating the video, talking about how AI works in sort of the video games we used to play when we were kids. And then goes in to talk about how they've actually built the artificial intelligence into the particular game. So they're talking about how colliders work, all of these various different sections, and all of the actual decisions that will be made in the racing game as a car drives around the track. There's some nice animations where they talk about these various triggers and colliders, and these long-range colliders where you check what's happening on the track and can actually make you steer around. And one of the points he was making was that the actual car, the AI cars, are going to be using exactly the same physics as the regular cars. There used to be early driving games where they didn't do that, so the AI cars would cheat. So the idea is that they build their AI and they basically send in the actual commands into the input, and you're using exactly the same physics to be able to do the main calculations for the car and so on. Also, lastly, tomorrow is practice for the Chinese Grand Prix. So if you are Formula One interested, then you're going to be up at 4 o'clock tomorrow morning to watch first practice. I typically watch the practice sessions a bit later on, but there's a race on Sunday. If you're not interested in Formula One, I recommend checking out a Grand Prix just to see the technology that people are using. The stuff that they do with telemetry data is incredible. They have incredible budgets that most companies would only dream of to invest in technology. And also, you've got Microsoft Dynamics and Avanade sponsoring the actual car. The sponsorship is there to provide a lot of the actual technical support to actually make the racing happen. So there's loads of technology, loads of physics, and loads of interesting stuff going on there. Thanks very much for your session. I'll be around here for questions, and I'll set up the game if anybody wants to play it. Thank you.